Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We are going to get into our program. I know you're going to enjoy it and enjoy a very special guest today. But before that, I have to make an appeal to you, our listeners, for your involvement, your interaction with the program, if you would. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the program. We'd love to hear any ideas you may have for topics. Please let us know. I'll give you two ways of reaching us. First is just a normal mail. To put a stamp on a letter and address it to Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. The zip code in Greenwich is 06836. Again, 06836. If you're on the computer and would rather email us, that's very simple. Just send your email to clemens10@aol.com. Let me spell Clemens for you. C-L-E-M-O-N-S, then the number 10, at AOL.com. While you're on the computer, I invite you to go to our magazine, Spirituality for Today, and you can find that at this site, spirituality.org, at spirituality.org. And that's important because you'll be wandering off somewhere else if you didn't have the spirituality.org. Okay, well, my first duty is to welcome my co-host, Mrs. Dorothy Riera. Welcome,
Thank
Dorothy.
You, Father. Always happy to be here with you.
Delighted to be here. And we have a guest who's been here a number of times in the past throughout the history of Thoughts for the Week. We're delighted to welcome her again. It is Ms. Erin Neal. Erin is the Director of Safe Environments. And that certainly has been a very important topic over the past couple of decades. We'd like to welcome Erin. Erin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Father Ray.
And Erin is sort of like the Dick Clark of people. She never ages. God bless her.
That is so true.
Oh, no.
Well, welcome, Erin. We'd love to, delighted to get into this topic, and it's one that's always been around, but it's a wider topic than we ever understood, I think, in the past. Let me first introduce you to our audience again, and let us know a little bit more about what your position in the Diocese of Bridgeport is.
Sure. So my office is the Office of Safe Environment, and we are a child sexual abuse awareness and prevention program. And our program in our diocese started in 2003, so I'm the founding director and have been here since then. I oversee not only the child abuse prevention program called Safe Environments, but I'm also the victim assistance coordinator, which means that I do the outreach and work with the survivors of sexual abuse who have been abused by members of the clergy and by others, not just unique to clergy abuse.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I think of your mission, obviously you've explained what it is you're trying to do. If you were to expand on that a little bit, what do you hope to accomplish, let's say, from the point of view of each of the parties involved?
Sure. So, you know, our program really is intended to bring awareness. So a lot of our program's outreach is to schools and parishes and all of the entities of the diocese to really educate about the problems surrounding child sexual abuse. And so we do a program, an educational program called Virtus, Protecting God's Children. And we also have a secular version of the same course that's called Protecting All Children. And we do that for our vendors and our tenants and independent contractors who are also in service to the church in a number of ways. So our outreach really goes to just about anyone who's doing just about anything in our diocese. Other than attending Mass, you can pretty much be expected at some point to be asked to come to this child abuse prevention workshop. And it really is giving the audience some opportunity to talk about how they can protect kids, some of their concerns that they might have with their own children. We have a lot of opportunities with parents in our schools and in the Catholic Charities programs. We even do training for the volunteers of our soup kitchens and McGivney Center and Cardinal Sheehan Center. So we really reach just about every entity of the diocese with the program. Mm-hmm.
You know what is amazing to me, Erin, is that this is just unfortunately for the diocese programs, yet child abuse goes beyond the diocese and beyond the scope of the diocesan centers, meaning public schools. Do they have a program like this that they could incorporate from you, because, you know, the children there are also part of this situation.
That's exactly right. I mean, what we know from the Bureau of Crime Statistics is that there are currently about 40 million survivors of child sexual abuse in the United States. That's just what is known. It's such a profound problem everywhere internationally. We don't really know the full scope of it, but we do know that it is a problem in many, many locations. So one of the things that we do is make sure that all of the schools within Fairfield County are doing some type of education and curriculum on child abuse prevention. And our public school system does a good job doing this. But we also offer parents who have children enrolled in religious ed programs the opportunity to come to ours as well. So if they feel that they may not know exactly what's going on in the public school or how this is being taught to children in a safe way, they can also come to ours and be part of that. We actually had an opportunity this fall for our parents with children in the religious ed programs to come with their child. So the training was together, and that was just a wonderful opportunity for a number of parents.
Because this is really a society problem. It's not just
for
the Catholic Church to address. I mean, we as a country and as a moral country, we need to address it throughout the whole.
Yeah, and I think we're doing better now talking about it and being able to expand awareness on this. So I think most institutions are doing something. To what degree, I think it varies quite a bit, but most institutions that work with youth are doing some type of training and criminal background checks, and that's something that we also do in our diocese to make sure everyone is vetted and safe and no one has a crime against a child in their past, so at least we know that. We do quite a bit of vetting.
Has the awareness made things better?
So, you know, the awareness does bring new concerns forward. Sometimes it means bringing things that might be early warning signs or concerns. And we do have parents and others who might bring something up that might be like a door left unlocked or something that might be early. And that's an indication that prevention's working, that people are talking about something that is worrying them before there's an actual incident that takes place. So it's very hard to measure prevention, but it is important to know that the absence of new allegations, the absence of new people coming forward, in the long run will show, you know, the effectiveness over time.
You know, you use the word awareness, and I keep thinking about, well, what does a person do once they become aware of something that doesn't seem right?
Yeah, so there's really two parts to that, because we teach in our Virtus awareness training that there are some safe boundaries that must always exist when working with children. And they may not be criminal behaviors. They might just be simple things, simple rules and standards that keep kids safe, like not meeting alone with children, not going overboard hugging or wrestling or horseplay. And those are things that just make it very difficult for someone to get away with harming a child, or what we would call grooming behaviors. And if we felt that there was any suspicion of that, that's when we start by a conversation with the person, saying that that might be overboard, that might be too much. Our, you know, our process is really about, if we can, talk to the person involved, their supervisor, and then continue the conversation. Now, if somebody repeats that behavior, that might be a sign that something is not right. And that's really where we might need to take that a step further and inform civil authorities that we have a concern about this person's interaction with children. And that also might mean that the person is just not a safe person to be volunteering or employed to be working with children.
So if someone becomes aware of something, the first thing would be to inform your office?
So they would try with the person, right? So if somebody is engaging in maybe a hug or, you know, horseplay or a little too much that seems overboard, it may not be criminal, but it might be too much. It might be a boundary violation, and they should talk to the person and their supervisor, and they should let our office know that there's a boundary concern. If it involves suspected abuse of a minor, so we're talking about an actual suspicion, not just a boundary, not just a violation of our rules or standards of safety, that's when it needs to be reported to either the police or the Department of Children and Family Services. And we do that within 12 hours of becoming aware of the incident. That's the law in Connecticut. And most individuals working with children in Connecticut are considered mandatory reporters. So they must make that report and must call the care line within those 12 hours.
Now, when you think about abuse of children, when we study the problem universally, I know you do tend to have many instances of abuse occurring within families who may be other family members abusing someone, or some trusted person who may have nothing to do with the church, as it were, but, you know, a coach or some other involvement. When you have, because you mentioned parents being involved in with their kids in religious ed, do the parents learn how to take that, or have they ever asked you about about suspicions they may have of a relative or another person?
Yes, actually, one of the most common calls that I receive are from people that are not related at all to the Catholic Church. It really is just a concern that might be reported from a neighbor or a family member over a holiday, or a concern about something that happened to them many, many years ago, and sometimes in another state. And we, you know, we really do two things. We really try to help that person to know that there are resources available and help for them if they're a survivor of abuse. And we also invite them to be part of our ministry, which we do have a group for survivors. But we then also encourage them to make that report to civil authorities if it never has been made before. Regardless of where the abuse occurred or regardless of when, we want to make sure that they have a chance, the civil authorities, police, or Children and Family Services can investigate it, because we know that people who harm children can go on for many years doing that.
How early do you start educating the children as to how to look at the signs?
Well, we start very early, and we encourage parents to have conversations even earlier than we begin in our schools. But kindergarten is the first year that we have it actually in a structured curriculum, and we use a program called Think First and Stay Safe. And it was created by Kenneth Wooden. It's the Child Lures Prevention Company. And at the kindergarten level, we're talking about just having very safe boundaries with adults and understanding rules and the concept of law. So we'll talk to children about how our bodies are our own, or they're a gift, and no one has the right to see or touch the parts of our bodies covered by a bathing suit. So we're very, very specific. We're very clear with kids about what that means, what the safety rules are. And as we get older, you know, we go through things in more detail with kids, and we talk about how to report concerns. We talk about how to look for tricks in unsafe people, whether it's a child or an adult, and to recognize those before a harm can happen.
When you take a look at, of course, the wide range of involvements in regard to children, let's say through the diocese or in the school system, you know, you hear so much about bullying and internet harassment of students by other students. Is this getting to be something that's a problem?
Yeah, I mean, serious bullying is a form of abuse. It can be, you know, for some kids, so difficult that they, you know, find it very difficult to focus in school. And there are some kids who have done harm to themselves because they have been so seriously bullied. So we take that very seriously, and we encourage kids to report that. We talk about that as part of our child safety program, and we go into the schools every single year to talk about that with our curriculum on child sexual abuse prevention. So it's in combination with the two. And a lot of the schools actually expand beyond that and have their own in services and programs related to bullying awareness and prevention. It's really an important awareness, because it is so common now. And more so common, probably was always in existence, but the awareness of it, and I think the cyber nature of the incidents now, make it very hard for a child who has been bullied on the internet or through an app to be able to escape that, because it seems to be present all the time for them.
And,
so they don't have that. Yeah, they don't have the same, you know, if we were bullied in school, we got to go home and have a break on the weekends. But when it happens now, kids, it's just relentless. Kids don't have the ability to sort of walk away because it's online and on the internet.
And not only that, unfortunately, it can lead many times to suicide, which has happened many times in Fairfield County.
That's right. And we have a wonderful resource here in Connecticut. So if a child is in crisis, experiencing a psychiatric crisis, there's something called Mobile Crisis Caroline, and we can contact them and have a social worker come out and just assess for safety, make sure that if there is a need for that child to get counseling or other services, if they've made a threat of harm to themselves or even just another type of threat, we would make sure that a child is evaluated and safe. And that's one important resource we have available to us.
You know, you've mentioned a couple of state organizations, I presume, that help out. What about your own staff? What do you have in your office? I really don't know.
Sure. Well, for a long time, it was just myself. And about 2 years ago, we have a new full-time position with our office. Astrid Alvarez is our database and VIRTIS specialist. So she helps us to coordinate all of the tracking of the safe environments, because when we do background checks and we do VIRTIS training, we have to show evidence of this, so that it's a very public, transparent response to what we have done to protect kids. So it's a big responsibility, and her work is to make sure that, you know, parishes know exactly what to report on this, to make sure they're documenting that everyone has gone through training and has really been vetted safely before working with kids. So it's a big responsibility. And we also have a part-time position in our office, and Deacon John DeToronto is our program assistant, and he helps with the training. So he'll help to go out and do the training with the children and the youth. And we also have a contracted person, Catherine Gingras, who is a social worker, and she helps to go out and train in the schools. So we really have a good number of, it's a small group, but we have a wonderful staff, and we work incredibly well, and everyone is so passionate about protecting children.
How often is the training, do people have to renew their training? When you say the social worker goes to schools, is it to train the adults?
It's to train the children. So the kindergarten training, all the way through the high school training, is done every year in every grade. And now parents may decide to opt out their child from training, but out of the 8,000 or 9,000 students we train annually, sometimes I think last year it was close to 19 opt-outs. This year it looks like there's only about 10 or 11. So it's a very small number of parents who choose to teach this at home in place of having the education in the classroom. So it really means that the parents are very trusting of the program we put in place.
And how about the adults?
So the adults are trained every 5 years if they are in routine contact with kids. So if they're a Eucharistic minister or an usher or a lector and they're not working with kids, they still need to go through VIRTIS, and they need to do it first live. They can renew online after 10 years. So somebody not working with children is in the 10-year role.
Do you find an involvement, too, with your, let's say, adult to adult? Is there anything involved with that, or is this simply adult and dealing with children, any area dealing with children?
Well, because I think my cell phone, as well as Michael Tintrup, who will take those calls for me as well, I think because we're so open to any type of concern that might come forward, oftentimes things like that are filtered through our office. But we do have processes in place for any adult-to-adult concern, and if it involved someone who was a member of the clergy, we would refer that to our clergy personnel office. If it was someone involving an employee or a volunteer, that would really go through our human resource office. So we do have the other resources available, but they do sometimes come through.
I think it's been about 18 years now since the bishops got together for the you know more than anybody about that with Bishop Laurie. Can you refresh? Because I think it has been 18 years.
Sure. About in 2002, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops gathered to talk about this problem in the church. It wasn't unique to the Catholic Church, but we certainly experienced our own problems with this. And we wanted to make sure, and the bishops really took a close look at it. And Bishop Laurie was one of the authors of something called the Charter for the Protection of Children and Young People. And that came up with the standard that every bishop in the United States needed to implement a safe environment program, have policies in place, and have victim assistance so that there was someone to intake calls when it involved sexual abuse by a member of the clergy. So that was an important piece. There was really no centralized person that was dedicated to that in the past. So it really changed a lot of how we do things in the church, because it really made us think twice before having an event or having a, you know, gathering or kids going camping. Everything sort of changed the way we did business. And it was for a good reason. And it really made people think twice about where we're going to go, making sure it's a safe place and making sure the adults are safe to be there.
I can imagine with what when you started, you were on your own. And this was specifically more like clergy abuse problems? Is that it?
It was, but, you know, we have had actually very little responses from those who've been survivors of abuse by priests. We've had a tremendous number of people contact my office who had been survivors of abuse by family and by others, and I think that's probably representative of how many incidents, more incidents of abuse within families or within other institutions, public and private, that there are out there. But our core group of committee for healing are the survivors of abuse by priests.
Do you have responsibility for other religious organizations who function in the diocese, whether it be orders of nuns or orders of priests?
So we have a standard that if any priest is going to exercise ministry within our diocese, they have to go through our process. So they have to either give us evidence that they've gone through an equivalent safe environment training, or they go through our training, and we will provide the training in almost every language. We have it in Portuguese. We have it in Spanish. We have had it in Polish. I mean, we've had it in a number of languages, including French Creole. So it really is delivered to the priest or the volunteer in a language that's comfortable to them. We also do the criminal background checks internationally. So even if we had an international priest that came to visit, we would do the criminal history in the country that they're from.
So someone entering the diocese do something here from another country or whatever has a whole panoply of clearing processes to go through too. That's great.
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful because you never know what culturally
someone
might be coming from, you know, especially in regard to either kids or women or whatever.
Yeah. And I think many of our clergy who've come from other countries have said this was so important. They asked to take the DVD or they'd like to be able to train in their home countries. And so there really has been a wonderful response from those who've come from elsewhere.
Hmm. Have there been many incidents that have been accounted for or that you have noted in recent years, or have things kind of gotten better in that respect?
So we don't have new cases. Right now we wouldn't consider this a current crisis, but, you know, we just don't know. You know, you don't know until many years. It takes a long time for people to come forward, but we think we're doing the very best that we know we can to ensure the safety of children and proper vetting of those who are going to be interacting with children. But we do know that there is a reduction, certainly, in the Catholic Church. That is the numbers that, you know, continually go down. And there's a study that happens every year called the John Jay Study.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an account of the incidents that have come forward that year. And, you know, we see the numbers going down, but in general, awareness is going up. So as that happens, there are more people from the past who are coming forward, and that's what we invite. We encourage people who may never have shared their story, have never had a good experience telling what happened to them within the church and being able to work with the church to bring healing to others. And we have that right here in our diocese.
And I think also because the problem, there's more awareness now, I think people tend to be more careful and not exploit children the way they used to. Not that it doesn't happen, because we have sex trafficking, that hasn't
That's
gone
right.
away. But I think in the awareness of children, where they can come and talk and say something is happening, that I think makes a big difference. Whereas before, everybody was afraid to confront an adult.
That's exactly right. And we tell kids that, you know, even if they have a suspicion, it doesn't have, they don't have to have proof to have a concern and to bring their concern forward. And I think for many years, it's the reason a lot of adults didn't bring things forward, or they brought it forward to someone else who didn't know what to do with that information. And so we want to make sure people are crystal clear how to report suspected abuse and how to bring that to the right people and to do it really promptly.
When I think of just what you're saying, you're not sure what to do. And I was thinking of families or people, you know, we tend to want to protect our own.
Yeah.
And somehow, whether it be an organization or a family, is there something in the training that helps them somehow feel better or feel more responsible to do something rather than to, you know, let's try to handle it within our own little group? And
yeah, and I think part of when we educate adults about this, we are talking about the possibility that someone could reoffend again. And so sometimes someone will come to me and say, look, I was abused. It was a family member. I don't want anything to be done about it. And we talk a little bit. And after talking with the survivor, it really sometimes makes sense to them that maybe even though they are no longer in touch with that person, they still know that that person could harm others. And so we try to encourage them to make a report. Now, we can't control it if they're an adult and they decide they don't want to go further. We have an obligation to report what we know. And we still bring that forward to the Department of Children and Families, even many years down the line. But it is a difficult process for anyone to have to go through, and it's terrible loss and trauma. So it really is working with a therapist and within a group that can really help people to feel they're at a stage where they can come forward and make a report.
And you know, I think also when it happens in families, it brings a lot of division amongst the family members. Because of denial, because of they don't want to believe it, or just simply because they want to defend the perpetrator. And that brings a lot of problems for the victim also.
That's right. It's painful. I mean, this is a terrible, terrible scourge, and it's terrible on the church. It is terrible when it happens within families. It is so difficult for someone who's a survivor to make that decision to bring that person to a criminal process, and it really is something that I think takes years for some people. One of the things that we talk about in our training is how common, and I think what people don't realize, they think it's only them, that they're not alone is so important to know, and that's why our group has been so valuable, that they have others to talk about this issue, but also to help sort of mentor one another as well. One of the things that we also talk about is the myth that it's strangers. You know, a lot of people will think strangers are responsible for child sexual abuse, and only 11% of it is committed by a stranger, 60% by people known and trusted, and it is 29% of family members.
Yeah.
When I think about things like the Me Too movement and all the things going on generally throughout the country versus the sexual free-for-all that's going on since the late 60s, early 70s, we've almost created an environment where you shouldn't respond in any negative way to somebody who wants to, become sexually aggressive toward you or involved with you. And now we seem to be getting this moral concern of, what's happening is abusive. And do you find it challenging to deal with the culture, or do you find some things really changing in people's minds?
I think what we find is that, people are more likely to share their concerns. So, that is important. Not always, but, we do find people are more willing to talk about it because of the attention that's been given to this problem. But we definitely, have a long way to go. We have a long way to go with that. And with children, the culture becomes so sexualized that it's very hard sometimes for kids to really make the differentiation between what's happening as being something that they're just so familiar with, and rather than something that might be a concern. So it's really, one example of that is kids who are something called sexting, right? So they will take images of themselves without clothes on and then transmit that electronically through their cell phones or through their computers or apps. And those are things that we never would have dreamed of many years ago, but this is really the kids who are engaging in what is, in effect, child pornography and transmitting it. And there could be adults behind it. There might just be children who are making, a curiosity thing. But it's so important that those are reviewed by police. And we have so many incidents of those, both in public schools and in private schools.
Well, you realize that when you take a look at the youth and things like, even in regard to threats for, that I'm going to shoot up my school, that type of thing. It seems like they almost need to have somehow this importance of what this can do, and how you just can't go ahead and just, because you feel an impulse, a little joke. It isn't a joke.
No. Years ago, I mean, we didn't know how to handle those things, and now we're very vigilant about that. And if a child does make a statement of harm to self or to others, we have a huge protocol in place for that. So it's good to know that that process is there. We hope we never have to use those processes, but they're there because of incidents that have happened in our country, and helps with the prevention by being more vigilant.
Well, I thank you very much, Erin, for being our guest. I know we'll do another program. We'll get in some other areas, but I want to thank you for being with us. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. And always remember, if you get whatever questions, you can always turn to the diocese or the police department. They'll help you with any concern you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. God bless.